Well, only three teams have a 100% record as we head into game week three of the Premier League, with Arsenal, Tottenham and Liverpool level at the top. Two of those teams face off this Sunday at Anfield, while the weekend starts with a West London derby. So there's lots to look forward to on this week's Assist. Well, welcome along to The Assist in association with freesupertips.com, your home for daily football hackers and bet builders. I'm Warren Ashurst, and this week I'm joined by Mark Langdon and Dan Charles to talk through their thoughts and tips for the weekend's Premier League and EFL action. Along the way, we'll discuss the likes of Ruben Amorim's future, of course, after another shocking defeat for Manchester United in midweek. Don't forget, of course, to leave your comments and views as well on the new format or anything football related. Tom Leach did exactly that last week, and he tipped up Palace or the draw and under 2.5 goals against Forest last week, saying it could be a 0-0 or a 1-1, which he was absolutely spot on with. Winnie Tito says, love the show. Thanks, guys. And Andy Turner, one of our regular viewers, also says, thanks, guys. Love the new format. He tipped up Everton draw no bet, Fleetwood draw no bet, and Swindon to beat Shrewsbury, with wins for both the Toffees, of course, and Swindon. Well, let's crack on then with the Premier League match week three. And as ever, we'll go in order of priority of the games. And it has to be a start with Sunday's 4:30 clash at Anfield as Liverpool take on Arsenal. As far as the betting is concerned, well, Liverpool are 23-20 to claim the win. It's 5-2 the draw and 23-10 Arsenal. Mark, we'll start with you. Liverpool, obviously, still up there with 100% record, but less than impressive in the Monday night clash at Newcastle.
Yeah, they did. It was a hard game for them. Was always going to be a difficult game, I think. You know, given the sort of transfer speculation over Isak, never easy going to Newcastle anyway. But the crowd were pumped up, players were pumped up. Clearly, Anthony Gordon went too far, got the red card, and you felt sort of that moment, it should have been easy for Liverpool to control the game, particularly when they went 2-0 up, and they didn't deserve to be 2-0 up. But once you're in that position, to throw it away was worrying, I think, from a Liverpool point of view. If you are on them for the title, they don't look as secure at the moment defensively. Maybe that shouldn't be a surprise. Got new players in both the fullback positions, haven't had their first choice central midfield together yet, you know, still bedding in new forward. So I think there's maybe a couple of excuses for why they've not hit their absolute peak yet. But they still managed to win, you know, found a way to win the game. And they've come, you could look at it a different way and say they've come through two tricky games. You know, Bournemouth are a decent side, Newcastle away is a very difficult game, and they've still got 6 points despite not playing well. So I think they'll need to improve against Arsenal, but I wouldn't put it past them. I don't think this is like a massive sort of problem for them with the way they're playing at the moment.
Dan, in contrast to Liverpool, struggling through that game with Newcastle, Arsenal at a canter absolutely disposed of Leeds 5-0 without too many issues. What did you make of that performance?
It was very good after half an hour. Watching the game, actually for half an hour, Leeds sort of settled into it, and you couldn't really see the Arsenal goal coming until obviously they got a corner and then you could see it coming, and that's what got them in front. Leeds sort of were rocked, and Arsenal kicked on and played well from that moment. Actually, for half an hour, I thought the performance was pretty ordinary. The worry for them as well is Odegaard had got the shoulder injury. Sounds like he might be okay for the Liverpool game. That's going to be, you know, touch and go. But Saka, you know, picked up an injury as well, and that's more of a problem, because even with the new players, you know, like Madueke who come in for Arsenal, Eze as well, I do think that Saka is kind of like the one irreplaceable one in their attack, and I always miss him when he's unavailable.
Before we get your best bets, guys, for the weekend's big clash, I just wanted to ask you, Mark, about Max Dowman. I mean, 15 years of age to be playing Premier League football, not only that, but also having an impact at this level as well. How special a talent have Arsenal got there?
Well, I mean, if you're playing sort of for Arsenal's first team at 15, you know, you will have been doing a lot right in training sessions. You know, Arteta's not doing that, you know, for fun. You know, he clearly believes he's good enough We've seen in the little cameos in pre-season that he's bag of tricks. I know Jamie Redknapp watches a lot of youth football, and he can get a bit excited sometimes, Jamie Redknapp. But he was even saying, this is a very special talent. To look like he belongs on that stage is remarkable for for somebody. Warren, we've both got sons that are slightly older than Max Dowman, and I certainly know that my son wouldn't be mature enough to be playing Premier League football at the moment. But almost outshone, wasn't he, by a 16-year-old for Liverpool, sort of two days later. So, look, if you're good enough, you're old enough, and that goes both ways. I think we sometimes get rid of players too quickly when they start reaching those sort of mid-30s, and they've still got a lot to offer. And similarly, if you're good enough at 16, like most are not going to be, but you occasionally get a Rooney type that is. And so I think certainly Dowman feels like he's got a massive future at Arsenal.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether we get a Dowan Ungamoah matchup this weekend at Anfield. We'll come to Dan in a second for his thoughts, but Mark, what's your best bet for Liverpool against Arsenal?
I'm going to go for a draw. I think it's a really big game this early on in the season, and feels slightly unsatisfactory that you've got the two teams that most people think are going to be fighting out for the title, like meeting in August, because a win for either team could have a big impact, but it feels bigger in April, doesn't it, rather than in August. So I actually think that this is a game going into the international break where you just don't want to lose, and that becomes probably more important than pushing for the win. Both have got very strong recent records. Liverpool lost one of their last 51 Premier League games at Anfield. We know it's a fortress, and it's what the foundations of the title success were built on. But then Arsenal, unbeaten in 22 games against the Big Six. But then I looked at that in terms of the Premier League, and I am including Man United in that Big Six, and we'll get onto them later on. But 11 of those games were away, and they drew seven of them, Arsenal. And it's just whether they've, I think, got that killer instinct to go to Anfield and win. We haven't seen them do that in a really big game so far against the Liverpool City. So that would be my doubt. And I know Dan thinks it'll probably be a tight game as well.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, Arsenal, will go to Liverpool with hope of a win, which would obviously give them a massive boost in terms of the rest of the season. But as Mark says, at this early stage of the season, with an international break coming up, neither team wants to lose this game.
No, and neither team actually looks that free flowing, which is, might sound strange to say when Arsenal have just beaten Leeds 5-0. But like I said, for the first half an hour of that game, they weren't free flowing at all. It was more of a gritty performance as well when they won at Manchester United. Saka, as I mentioned, is a big miss for them. But then on the flip side of that, if you're thinking about going for Liverpool, I mean, some people are going to look at that odds against with their great home record, but that performance at Newcastle, I agree with Mark. It was a really bad time to go there, and it's generally, it's always a tough place to go, as they say. But the standard of that performance, I thought, was abysmal. Really, there was weaknesses kind of shown at the back. Kirke's got completely outmuscled, didn't he, for the headed goal from Grimaraes, and they just didn't seem to get their foot on the ball and try and control the game at any stage, really. And that would be a worry for me. It's early days, but Wirtz as well has been incredibly quiet, I feel, in the first couple of games from them. And from Liverpool's perspective, it's almost more important, I think, to get a better performance, even maybe, than the result. And I do agree with Mark as well that I think the draw, I think if you offered both teams a draw from the start of the game, I don't think they'd be too displeased. I think that's the way it could end up.
OK, well, let's turn our attentions now to the West London Derby, which takes place at 12:30 on Saturday. It's Chelsea against Fulham at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 8-15, the draw 7-2, and it's 9-2 Fulham. Chelsea, we've seen the best and the worst of them probably in the first couple of weeks so far. Hard to probably read too much into last weekend, Dan, bearing in mind that West Ham were the opponents and they seem to having an absolute nightmare at the minute.
Yeah, that's my thoughts, really. It's hard to assess. I mean, I watched that game and you are looking at it thinking, are Chelsea this good or are West Ham just like incredibly poor? I mean, it's probably a little bit of both, but it makes it hard that then, you know, you're two games in. Chelsea kind of struggled to get going, didn't they, in the first game against Crystal Palace, which was understandable as well, given the short gap between the Club World Cup and the start of the season. Against West Ham, obviously much, much better, and they're going to take a lot of confidence from that, especially without Cole Palmer even being on the pitch. But I just feel that Fulham are going to be much trickier opponents. They're well organised, almost get underestimated at times because they haven't done a lot of business in the market. Well, unlike teams you know, like Brentford, Bournemouth, Wolves, they haven't lost lots of key players in the summer, so they've kept that continuity. We've seen already, you know, we're coming back to get a draw at Brighton and a very strong second half performance against Manchester United. They're still a decent side. And last season, you look at the fixtures, both two tight games. Chelsea won late on at Craven Cottage. Fulham won late on in the game at Stamford Bridge. Maybe this time, neither team will win late on. I just think the draw looks a decent price to me. I'm going to go for the draw.
The similar situation, Mark, to Chelsea at West Ham as it was with Fulham with Manchester United. Because I thought, looking at the first half performance, Fulham might have problems this season. But then they flipped it around in the second half. But then again, you don't know whether that was because United were poor.
Yeah, it's hard. We will get on to Manchester United, I promise. Yeah, it is hard to judge Man United at the moment. But, I mean, I think Fulham are one of the kind of easiest teams to rate this season because there's been such little change. I don't see really much difference for them. I think for something like Aston Villa that haven't changed, I think like there's like a frustration in the fan base of like wanting more and wanting something different. You know, I think Fulham, I'm sure they've got some fans that are, you know, want loads of new signings, but generally speaking, same manager, same players, same mid-table effort again, I would assume. And what we know is that they're, you know, awkward to play against. They're very well organised. They're compact, play with a low block when they need to. Chelsea struggle to break down teams generally that play like that. You only have to go back to the Crystal Palace game on match day one to a different formation, but same kind of level of team and same kind of approach. I think this time Chelsea might just do enough. I'm going for Chelsea to win the game 1-0. Something that I was looking back, actually, they've done in six of their last 10 games at Stamford Bridge in all competitions. They've won 1-0. So they've got enough players to eventually find a way through.
OK, it's to Elland Road next for the tea time game on Saturday as Leeds play host to Newcastle. Leeds 13-5 to claim the victory. It's 11-10 Newcastle and the draw is 12-5. Sense a little bit that the optimism around Elland Road, Mark, has been tempered. Obviously, that opening day win over Everton has given them a boost. But then, of course, they followed that up by getting thumped at Arsenal and then losing to Sheffield Wednesday on penalties in midweek. And this is going to be another tough test.
Yeah, I mean, I think Leeds will do most of their best work at home. The games against Arsenal are not going to determine their kind of survival. The Sheffield Wednesday game was an embarrassing result because, you know, Wednesday had a lot of young players there, no crowd. That, in a way, might have just made the game feel almost surreal and like not like a proper Yorkshire derby, you know, type match. Calvert-Lewin didn't endear himself to his new supporters, missed a few chances. They dominated the XG. You would expect them to do that. I think Elland Road, Premier League game against the Newcastle team that picked up a few injuries and suspensions against Liverpool, you know, they probably got more chance of winning that game now than they did on Monday morning, given sort of what happened to Newcastle later on in that game. I'd struggle to kind of look into the match markets. Gone for Dan Burn to be carded. It's around about a sort of 14-5, 3-1 shot. He's a very aggressive defender anyway. Picked up his card against Liverpool in midweek. And just check on my stats because I've got them just in front of me. He has picked up a number of cards. So 12 yellow cards last season, one already this term. He might get a little bit overexcited at Elland Road.
Yeah, is this a big chance, Dan, for Leeds? As Mark says, no Anthony Gordon. Likely that Tonali might be missing after picking up an injury. Joe Linton also got an injury as well. Is this an opportunity for them to get a big 3 points?
I think it's a great opportunity for Leeds. And I would question, like, the drift in their prices. They've actually drifted since the Sheffield Wednesday game. Well, they made nine changes for that
Yeah.
game, so you can't really assess, the first team based on, like, if you like the reserves' performance. And I just think that it's a brilliant time for them to play Newcastle. Newcastle, let's get it right. They were outstanding against Liverpool, but they're taking some blows at the moment, aren't they? Joe Linton, I thought, was magnificent until he was forced off with injury. Lost Cher as well in that game. Tonali. So you've got a big chunk of your spine and your team out. You're already lacking a spine, if you like, through the middle up front, because you're lacking a proper cutting edge. I know Asula come on and score, but I don't think he's up to anywhere near the level at the moment for the Premier League. And Leeds, they're probably. I would argue they're maybe 2 points better off than they would have expected to be at this stage. They might have taken a draw at home to Everton and would have expected to lose at Arsenal. They're already on 3 points. As I say, the timing of this fixture is decent. They started first half an hour at Arsenal. I thought they played some good stuff. I think it's a good chance for them to get another win. I think they're overpriced.
We'll move on to Sunday's games now, and the first of the 2 p.m. kickoffs is at the Amex Stadium, where Brighton host Manchester City. Brighton 16-5 off the back of a thumping win in the EFL Cup in midweek. Manchester City 4-5, and it's 14-5 the draw. We have to start with City after last week against Tottenham, Dan. And again, it's hard to assess where they are after a first couple of games. What did you make of the display against Spurs first?
Hard to assess, but they were poor in that game. When you also think that Spurs, I mean, you give a lot of credit to Spurs because they got in front quite early and then continued to play the same way, and ended up with a higher number of shots, which considering you're holding on to a lead at the Etihad is quite impressive from a Spurs point of view, but not for City, who I thought were. Were quite disjointed, and the same old failings are looking kind of open, to counter attacks. Teams are going to be looking at the way Spurs press them and look to do the same thing as well. You can imagine Brighton certainly being at home, might look to get after them when they can. And then they've got a nice bit of confidence now back Brighton after their 6-0 win at Oxford in the EFL Cup. However, I would say Brighton. They've got 1 point at the moment. Now, big disappointment conceding later on against Fulham. Created chances at Everton, but a disappointing result for them. I can just see this being. I think both teams are kind of easing their way into the season. I think it'll be quite a close game. I'm going to go with a draw again. I think the draw's overpriced.
Is this a big chance, Mark, for City to bounce back, or is it another potential banana skin here?
Oh, it's an awkward game. I mean, Brighton play aggressive football. Create chances against just about anybody. They've caused City problems in the past. I just find Brighton so wasteful. They shouldn't have been. I know they got themselves in a position where they were like losing 2-0 at Everton. Like it just shouldn't have happened. They missed chances. Obviously, Welbeck's penalty was poor. But Mitoma could have scored earlier on. And just wonder whether they're going to be one of them teams that does well on kind of the numbers and stats and. They've been like that previously, and now they've not got João Pedro, who moved up to Chelsea. So I'm sort of more hopeful that City, that was just a difficult game for them against Tottenham. Marmoush missed a good opportunity, missed a one-on-one. Vicario saved it at 0-0. And then at 1-0, Haaland missed, or was it 2-0? Haaland missed a header that I think he should have scored. And, the probably more wasteful than they would have wanted being Trafford to make the mistake for the second goal. So I think Guardiola will hope that it was more down to individual kind of things that went wrong. Stone slipped for the first goal, didn't he? So I'd be more prepared to give them a chance here. But I was just looking at Marmoush to score the first goal. He had the an XG of 0.65 against Spurs. He, as well as that one-on-one, he also had a shot that just drifted wide. Six touches inside the Spurs penalty box. He looked as big a threat, I would say, as Erling Haaland. So a much bigger price. I'll go for Marmoush about 6-1, 13-2 for the first goal. I'll go there.
Okay. Well, Tottenham have every reason to be buoyant going into their home clash against Bournemouth. Two wins from two so far for Thomas Frank. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday again for Spurs, who are 8-11 to collect the win. It's 16-5 Bournemouth and also 16-5 the draw. Bournemouth, like you mentioned earlier on, Mark, dangerous opponents. And this is the type of game that if Spurs are looking at Champions League football qualification that they ought to be looking to win, but also maybe setting a stall out here?
Yeah, I find, you know, Bournemouth, as they showed at Anfield, have got a lot of quality going forward with Semenyo. I rate the manager incredibly highly. And I think they'll cause Tottenham problems. They did last season. Maybe a different Spurs, but we are only a couple of games in, so don't want to get too excited. You know, I don't think you get too up, too down, too early. The one thing I would just note about Spurs, they've kept clean sheets, but the expected goals against is 2.4. Burnley will probably just more wasteful than City in some respects. And so I'm going to go for both teams to score an over 2.5 goals. I think, you know, Thomas Frank's found a way to get Tottenham going in the final third. And I like the way that he, you know, doesn't need to use the transfer market. He can, there's solutions, although Kudus has made a difference. But I wouldn't rule Bournemouth out of this game. So, yeah, both teams are scoring over 2.5 goals.
Yeah, dangerous for Tottenham here, Dan. You know, get a third win will be huge. But as you say, Bournemouth, with the pace that they've got going forward, could maybe put that clean sheet running threat here.
Yeah, I can see Spurs edging this, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, in any ways, you know, a comfortable afternoon. I remember the game at Spurs in March last season. It finished 2-2. Bournemouth absolutely battered Spurs on that occasion. I mean, how they didn't win the game was incredible, really. But it is different Spurs. I mean, you've got to wait maybe a few more games in to see how different, but certainly the early signs are good. It was a fantastic performance at the Etihad. That midfield three is working really well. Richarlison started the season. He looks a different player at the moment, playing incredibly well. And there's a solidness about it. I mean, the XG against, I kind of hear that, but they've had City away. You're probably always going to be conceding, you know, more chances than a normal game. And they do look better, I think, whenever Van de Ven and Romero are together there in the defence. I just think that solidity with Spurs might just get them a narrow win. I'm going to go with Spurs to win by one goal. That looks attractively priced at 3-1. Bournemouth, less settled at the back. A lot of defensive, you know, departures in the summer. They brought a couple of defenders in. Might need a little bit of time to bed down. Even when they beat Wolves 1-0, Wolves had 10 men for a long time and were still creating chances with 10 men. So maybe a good time for Spurs to play them.
OK, well, five games in, five still to go, and we'll start off with the clash at the City Ground on Sunday, a 2 p.m. kickoff for Nottingham Forest against West Ham. Forest 4-6, West Ham 17-4 on the draw, 11-4. Most people would consider that Graham Potter's hanging by a thread at the moment, Dan, considering what we've seen so far this season. He needs a result here.
He does. I can't say I'm confident they're going to get a result. I do. The 4-6 Forest, I've got to admit, I'm not in love with that price. Given we're quite early into the season, it wouldn't completely shock me if West Ham did give a response. I was expecting a response, wasn't I, last week? I advised, you know, a lay of Chelsea there, which, you know, I got egg on my face there with that one. But and then I've gone to Wolves in the FL Cup, put out a strong team, got in front, and then collapsed at the end of that game as well. So it's a real difficult moment for West Ham. Forest have kind of had a tricky summer, ended up keeping Gibbs White, though. Started well in the league as well with 4 points. I think they'll probably win the game, but as I said, that price, I'm not convinced. I'm going to go with Chris Wood, who's in form, to get the first goal at 9-2. West Ham's defended on crosses, I noticed, against in the Chelsea game and the Wolves game midweek was dreadful. So Chris Wood, I'm sure, will be licking his lips.
Mad to think, Mark, that these two managers are at the top of the first manager to be sat market, bearing in mind the different fortunes probably of the teams in the last few weeks or so. But Graham Potter in particular, as I say, is under immense pressure at the minute.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, he actually didn't improve the team sort of results-wise in terms of, like, points return from, you know, Lopetegui over his time. Nuno has obviously got sort of internal politics at play with why he's so high up in the sack race betting. Got Ruben Amorim now sort of trying to get jostle into that fight as well after what happened to them at Grimsby. I think that actually the 4-6 is okay for Forest. West Ham have conceded 11 goals, and I'm not sure that they've got a solution to their problems at the back. So, yeah, Forest to win.
Okay, Manchester United Burnley is up next at Old Trafford, Saturday at 3 p.m. We did promise you a Manchester United chat, and I'm sure there's plenty to say. United 4-11 to claim the victory, 7-1 Burnley, and 4-1 the draw. Where do you stand, Mark, with Ruben Amorim at the moment? I mean, I watched sections of that game against Grimsby, and you know they've got all the big names on the pitch at the end of the game, and then for the penalty shootout, and still they find a way to lose the game.
It's a really difficult one, because there's some people who say, well, at some stage you have to stick with something. You have to stick with a manager and a plan and an approach. But like, can you stick with something that you don't think is right? And then you can't just, there's that Mick McCarthy meme, isn't there, where you go, it can't get any worse, can it, Mick? And he says it can. And like, you just keep wondering kind of where United, like how low can they go? And then something else happens that sort of pushes that bar even lower. Like, he was mocked. I always think when a manager starts to get mocked, that's when it becomes difficult for them. And he had like that tactics board, like plastic tactics boards out at Grimsby, soaking wet. And he kind of looked a bit like Ted Lasso, didn't he, in that moment, which isn't a great look. Then the penalty shootout, he's not with his staff, he's sat on his own, can't even watch penalties against Grimsby. They're out of the League Cup in August, there's no European football. Things are bad at United, but they've just given him the summer to bring in the players that he wants, to play a way that he wants. Like, can you move away from that in sort of August? I don't think you can. I think you have to at least sort of give it half a season. Otherwise, like, you're just going to constantly be changing. But I'm saying that without having that much faith in actually what he's doing, because I'm not sure that the three at the back is working for them. Like, if you give him the keys to the kingdom and he wants to sell Mainoo because he can't find a place for him in the starting 11, like, could Mainoo be more important to United in 2 years' time than Ruben Amorim? So I just think it's a really, really bad situation. He hasn't won back-to-back league games yet, and he's been there since October. Thomas Frank has done that in his first 2 weeks at Tottenham, and hasn't had kind of that transfer fund to just go and change the teams how we want. So I think they've got to stick with him, but it's not through any great faith in him. I don't know if you agree, Dan.
I just wonder, I know he's wedded to this, to this three at the back, and I understand if he wants to carry on starting with it, but in game, I mean, surely he would do himself a favour if he just showed, a little bit of flexibility. There's no drama in game in actually making it easy to get some attacking players on the pitch, and just the way to Grimsby, you're chasing the game, surely there's scope then to just have to change your tactics. For me, for a manager to be that inflexible, and the good managers I feel are capable of changing tactics as and when the situation demands, for me, that would be a big mark against. I don't see it working out for him long term at Manchester United, and I do think eventually they'll have to find a replacement.
I mean, Mark, you've already alluded to it. The spine of the team is probably the concern. I mean, the goalkeeper situation's still not clear yet. Centre-back-wise, they've looked a little bit better in the first couple of Premier League games, but you're also still looking at Casemiro in the centre of midfield, where most people feel like he's past his better days. And they've still not really got an out-and-out striker to deliver the goals. Sesko looks like he's going to take some time, as quite rightly he would need, to kind of get used to this level. The only solace you can take from Ruben Amorim, Mark, is the fact that he didn't have a Steve McLaren brolly in the weather. So hopefully that might work in his favour on that front. I mean, Burnley are a massive price at 7-1. And obviously they're coming in off the back of a win over Sunderland last week. Is there a chance of another upset here?
There is a chance of another upset. What I would, if I'm just going to give United any credit, I don't know if that's the right word, but it will be probably a different goalkeeper and an entirely different back three from what started the game at Grimsby. And I do think they've been defending better. Like, Casemiro and Bruno Fernandes didn't start that game. I'm not saying they're perfect, but Ugarte and Maine, who didn't play well either. So you are getting back more towards the foundation of what was not terrible performances, I didn't think, in the first two league matches. I think Mason Mount's been quite important as well, and he didn't start that game. Agree on Sesko, looks well off it at the moment. Like, the massive, you wouldn't have thought this a couple of weeks ago, but it's a massive game for Manchester United. I'm going to go for United to win and under 3.5 goals. I think they look solid enough, like I say, with the Premier League team out. And it's just like Burnley, have they got enough to hurt United going the other way? I'm not sure that they have. So yeah, United to win, but in a real gritty, sort of unspectacular way.
Dan, are you the same opinion?
I agree. I've got the same tip. United under 3.5 goals. I just think if he's looking back on that game, he was very critical of his players. But I thought with his selection, it might look like I'm talking after the event here. But to pick two youngsters in the back three, I think was a bit of a risk too far. And Fredrickson was, not tight enough, wasn't he, for the all important first Grimsby goal. And I just think if they'd have had two experienced guys in there in that back three, and maybe if you want to make changes, maybe make them further up the pitch. I think, Xerxes only came on, didn't he, for right towards the end of the game when they're chasing the game. I think, with hindsight, maybe he could have started Xerxes and had a more experienced defence. I think with a more experienced defence, they're more solid, as we saw in the Arsenal game. I didn't give up a lot of chances in that game. They're pretty decent, at Fulham. 1-1 draw at Fulham is no disaster. And in terms of the Premier League performances, they haven't actually been that bad. So I think this will be the moment they do get the first 3 points on the ball. Burnley, be happy to get that first 3 points at home to Sunderland last week, but I think they'll generally struggle away from home. They'll struggle to get enough goals.
Okay, we'll head to Villa Park next for what is a 7 p.m. kickoff on Sunday as Aston Villa play host to Crystal Palace. Villa 10-11, it's 13-5 the draw, and Palace 3-1. What are you thinking here, Dan?
I don't think it'll be a great game to watch. I think Villa with the fixtures, you've got Newcastle at home with the turmoil over the Isak transfer speculation. Then you go to Brentford, who've got the Wissa situation and had injuries to key players, losing the manager as well. You couldn't really ask for two better timed fixtures. And you could say that the timing of this one's pretty good as well, because Crystal Palace have just lost Eze. And they're having to play on Thursday night, travel to Norway in the Conference League playoff. So it's good timing for Villa, but I've been so unconvinced by the performances. I thought they were lucky to get a draw against Newcastle. Couldn't make an impact against Brentford. Still haven't scored any goals. And Palace, despite the inconvenience of losing Eze and this Europa trip, I think they can go to Villa and be competitive. Which way the game's going to go, I'm not too sure, but I don't think either team are going to be free-flowing, so I'm going to go for under 2.5 goals at a shade of odds on.
These two teams met last season four times, Mark, and Palace didn't lose on any of those occasions. And, I saw them against Nottingham Forest last week, and even without Eze, they still look like a team that can compete.
Yeah, I mean, it's one player. I think over a season you miss Eze in one game. I don't think you can. He's a good coach, Glasner. You find solutions. That's what separates good coaches. Maybe that's who United should go for, Glasner, because he seems to know how to play that 3-4-2-1 and sort of make it work. And you wouldn't need to change sort of any of the players or the philosophy. You just get somebody in that kind of feels more suited to the job. I think he's doing so well at Palace. I was going to go for Palace or draw. Double chance. I mean, I watched Villa against Brentford on Saturday. I thought they were dreadful. I mean, they had 70-odd% possession. But that game state, Brentford were 1-0 up and sort of just said, break us down. And they didn't look like they could. Rodgers kept giving the ball away. Watkins doesn't look particularly happy. You mentioned Palace had the number last season. Beat them in the FA Cup semi-final. Beat them in the League Cup. Took 4 points off them in the Premier League. Yeah, Palace will draw a double chance.
Yeah, Villa with no goals yet to report in their opening two games. Two more games left to go on our Premier League rundown, and we'll start off with a match at Molineux. Wolves against Everton is a 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. And Wolves, I can tell you, are 13-8 to claim the victory. Everton 9-5 and the draw 11-5. still early in the season for everybody, but particularly for these two teams, Mark, because you feel like they're still kind of gelling the teams together.
Yeah, I mean, me and Dan have got different selections here, so I'll tell you why Wolves are going to win and then Dan will tell you why they won't. So I watched Wolves against West Ham on Tuesday when Strand Larsen sort of came on and sort of they started getting crosses into him. Made a big difference sort of last 15, 20 minutes sort of when they actually played into Strand Larsen. Mm. What I'm talking about, they started to look a much better team. Like, I'd be selling Strand Larsen for 55, 60 million, but he is important to Wolves. Everton wasn't impressed with them against Leeds on that Monday night, and I felt that Brighton were their own worst enemy in that game, and also thought, you know, first home game, there's just a bit extra on it for Everton, maybe. This is a big game for Wolves so far. They had 10 men against Bournemouth, so you maybe forgive that. They lost at City. We don't quite know how good or bad City are going to be this season. So I just thought, I thought Wolves should be favourites to win, but Dan's going to tell you why they shouldn't be and why Everton are going to win, I think.
Yeah, you fancy Everton here then, Dan.
Yeah, I just think Everton, if you look through their form since David Moyes has gone in, they perform really to like a top half standard. Now, I mean, there's question marks about whether they can carry that on and end up, you know, with a top half finish this season. But the Leeds game, I think, was always going to be tough with the atmosphere there. They kind of quietened it down, and I thought it got to a stage in the second half where they looked the likelier winners and. The goal, the penalty, there's argument over whether it should have been given. There was a slip in the build-up. I just thought they were a little bit unlucky there. The Brighton game, I probably thought they were not wonderful in that, but a bit of quality kind of wins it, didn't it? A great assist for the first goal from Jack Grealish. He then lays on the second as well, a bit less spectacular, just a layback. But he can make the difference for them. I think Everton are a strong, well-organised team, tough to score against, and you had that little dash of extra quality with Grealish. I think that might be the difference here and win a tight game.
Okay, Saturday's 3 p.m. game at the Stadium of Light concludes the Premier League wrap-up as Sunderland play host to Brentford. Sunderland 19-10, 29-20 Brentford and 23-10 the draw. Dan, already three games in, this is looking like it could be a big game.
Yes, I mean, Brentford, you've got 3 points now with a very good performance. I mean, Villa, as Mark said, were poor, but Brentford actually did well, didn't they? And then they've gone and followed that up with a 2-0 win at Bournemouth in the EFL Cup. So you've got to give Keith Andrews a bit of credit, actually. He's gone in there and, you know, the difficulty of replacing such a good manager, Thomas Frank. You've got Johan Wisser unsettled. He had injuries, he had at the start other areas. The attack and Bermo leaving as well. That's quite a lot for, you know, a rookie manager to handle. And I would say at the moment, you'd have to say he's handling it quite well. He's now got the centre forward, Thiago, who was injured, when he paid big money for him, was injured most of last season. He's now, you know, back for them and making an impact for them. And I just think that Sunderland, that was a blow for them, that game, to start so well, beating West Ham 3-0 and to lose 2-0 at Burnley. Dan Ballard, who's a big, big player for them at the back as well, he went off injured after 9 minutes. That leaves a kind of a massive hole at the centre of defence. And I think Brentford have got more quality across the most areas of the pitch. Now they've got a cutting edge up front. I think they'll go there and win.
Yeah, Mark, you said that Elland Road's going to be big for Leeds. Stadium of Light, probably similar for Sunderland this season.
Yeah, and that's why I'm going for Sunderland draw, no bet, really. I thought I like what they did against West Ham, though maybe they didn't beat too much, given the Hammers' struggles. But I've got Brentford down as a team that I think will, be down towards relegation battle this season. So I can't get too excited about the fact that they've just beaten Aston Villa. I'll take a longer-term view that they're not going to be great this year, and I'm going to go Sunderland draw, no bet.
Okay, that's the Premier League wrapped up then on this week's assist. Up next, it's your FPL update, and then we'll discuss all things EFL. Well, now here is Tom Hill to discuss all things Fantasy Premier League as we move into Game Week 3.
Game Week 3 is upon us, and it's the last round of fixtures before the international break. It was another week of surprises in Game Week 2, with Arsenal defender Jurrien Timber the top scorer with a massive 24 points. It's time to look ahead and pick out the three best outfield players for this week. In defence, we've picked out Nikola Milenkovic, priced at 5.5 million. West Ham are their opponents for Nottingham Forest this week, and they're ranked 19th in the league for XG, and they've looked so vulnerable at the back. Against Chelsea last week, they were second best at set pieces throughout, and that means Milenkovic enters the fray. West Ham have conceded the most big chances, the most shots in the box, and the most headed attempts. Not only will Milenkovic have a great chance of a clean sheet, he could also get himself on the score sheet. In midfield, despite the embarrassing defeat to Grimsby in the EFL Cup, Manchester United have a home fixture against Burnley. They have the sixth best XG record and will expect to rack up the goals. And Mateus Cunha is our pick at £8.1 million. Bruno Fernandes will be heavily selected, but he's preferred for his DEFCON contribution. And it is Cunha that has had the most shots and the most shots on target this season for the Red Devils. We've doubled up on Nottingham Forest this week for our striker position, and it's Chris Wood who's our man in the final third. Priced at £7.7 million at present, he'll be licking his lips at the thought of facing that West Ham defence. He's already got 15 points to his name after scoring a brace against Brentford in week one, and he faces a Hammers defence that have conceded 11 in three games in all competitions. We've already mentioned West Ham's issues at the back, and Wood is an ever-present in the Forest attack and is their first choice penalty taker.
Big thanks then to Tom for his FPL update. Let's look into the EFL now, and Stoke and Middlesbrough still top of the Championship after three straight wins, but certainly performance of the week last week, Dan. Coventry 7-1 win over QPR. The Sky Blues now up to third in the table, and we mentioned them, of course, a couple of weeks ago, but they look like real contenders, serious contenders now to be promoted to the Premier League.
They do. I think it's really important that they keep hold of their best players as well. There's been a few people sort of sniffing around some of the, you know, guys like Jack Redoni, you know, really impressive midfield players, got a goal in them, lots of almost like a Frank Lampard type, if you like type of midfielder. Hadji Wright started well. I went with him to be the top Championship scorer. He's got off to a strong start, and I think they probably will do some late business in the market because they've been quite quiet, Coventry, on transfers, but they've got a, you know, supposedly quite a decent budget there. So I fancy Coventry at the start of the season actually to go well. I would just mention on that game that I think their XG was actually under two. And
well, one point,
yeah.
Not very many.
And I mean, a couple of the finishes, I think Victor Torp's two goals and his two goals were outstanding finishes, would explain the, you know, the low makeup there. But no, I do think they're going to have a strong season. I don't think it'll be a flash in the pan. I think they'll continue pushing on and be a feature in the promotion race.
We'll get Dan's three EFL tips in a moment. But Mark, you were also keen on Coventry as well, looking good at this stage.
Yeah, they were the team I tipped to win the Championship. You know, would have hoped to have beaten Hull on the opening day, but they didn't. And that's the Championship, I suppose. You know, you just don't. I don't think Dan mentioned this last week. I don't see a sort of 100-point team in the league this year. So you will get results. And Lampard said after that opening game, well, we didn't lose. And, you know, that might sound a bit defeatist in some respects, a bit negative. But I think he was, you know, pragmatic to the point of, you know, you just can't win every game in the Championship. Like, they're not going to be a lead. So to then, yeah, I wouldn't say they've beaten two great teams in Derby and QPR, so there's work to do. But in terms of the spending power, like, they got a decent chunk, didn't they, from the Gyökeres sell-on. So you would hope that they'd be ambitious enough to be able to fend off any bids for their players and then maybe go and sort of step on the gas in the last couple of days as well. But just while we're on transfers, just very quickly, former presenter Jack Reeve of The Assist. I spoke to him last night after Nunez's departure. He's going from Norwich to Ipswich. Mm-hmm. He's not a happy chappy. I mean, that's some move, that one. Fair play to Nunez. I hope he doesn't go on the Norfolk Broads anytime soon.
There may well be some sort of tractor protest blocking the roads very shortly if that goes down as badly as we think. Let's have a look then at the best three bets from Dan then for this week's EFL. And we'll start, Dan, with your selection in the Championship.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, I think Swansea odds against to win at Sheffield Wednesday is a decent bet. I appreciate the fact Sheffield Wednesday have gone to Wrexham last weekend, come from 2-0 down, got a draw and looked like they were pushing to get the winner towards the end. I don't actually rate Wrexham that highly, even though they've done their best to strengthen. So I'll kind of temper the enthusiasm a bit there. And even the getting past Leeds in the EFL Cup was an incredible effort. But if you look at the stats for the game, they had 20% possession, touches in the opposition box, and it was 44-6. So, you know, they've clearly ridden their luck there against pretty much a Leeds reserve side. I know Sheffield Wednesday rested a lot of players as well. I'm sure their fans would be, you know, eager to shout that out. And they've clearly got some good young players coming through. But I think without some serious, you know, investment and players coming in, that squad looks too thin for me. I think the squad as it stands is certainties for me for a bottom three finish. And that makes Swansea go in there. They've started quite well, got a good 1-0 win against Sheffield United, 1-1 draw against Watford last week. I think Watford are going to do all right this season. So 4 points from the last two games. I think they'll get another three this weekend.
Yeah, and the atmosphere at Hillsborough will probably be certainly raucous, to say the least. Let's look at the League One selection now. Dan, who are you looking at here?
Yeah, going to go with Bolton to win away to Blackpool. Where Bolton have kind of drawn a lot of games at the moment. They've had one win, three draws, one defeat. But if you look at the way they're dominating games, they've had the most shots in the league, 84 shots. The 1-1 at home to Reading, I watched quite a bit. They were dominant for the vast majority of that game. Lincoln, they conceded in the first minute and then battered them and eventually equalised right near the end. Another 1-1 draw. I just think that it's going to come for Bolton sooner or later. You keep dominating games, you're going to start putting the wins on the board. And Blackpool are a really good team to play at the moment. Four losses out of five. Lost 1-0 at Plymouth last weekend. Plymouth didn't have a point, you know, until that game, and were still worthy winners of that match. And Blackpool have conceded the most goals, 12 goals in five League One games. So Bolton at odds against, they'll have a big away following there as well, who look a good bet.
Okay, and finally, League Two, who are we looking at here?
I'm going to go with Bristol Rovers to not to lose away to Grimsby. And I've got huge respect for Grimsby and what they've done. I do think they're going to be right up there in the League Two promotion race, because I've been impressed with them this season. They're unbeaten in all competitions. But to play with that emotion on a Wednesday night and then get yourself physically and mentally right for the league game on a Saturday against a team who, by the way, they've started slowly, Bristol Rovers, but they're a big club in League Two, and I do think they'll be kind of up there pushing as well for promotion. They stopped the rot, Bristol Rovers, last weekend, got a good 1-0 win at home to Cambridge. Daryl Clark, I think, is going to get it right there eventually, and I think they're a decent bet to go to Grimsby and take at least a point back to the West Country.
Okay, so Dan's three EFL tips this week: Swansea, Bolton and Bristol Rovers double chance in their game against Grimsby. It's Mark's turn now, Premier League bet builder. And Mark, we couldn't go anywhere else other than the game at Anfield.
We have to go to Anfield, slightly annoyingly, because I haven't got a massive view on the game overall. I think we'll start with the obvious one, Salah shot on target. It was strangely quiet, I suppose, against Newcastle, but he had his efforts against Bournemouth, and I expect at Anfield he'll be right back on it. In that sort of battle he's going to have of Calafiori to be carded is one I was looking at. I think you've got two ways of winning this bet. Firstly, stopping Salah is difficult, and one way to do that, as most fullbacks have found, is to foul him. Second way, and I might not endear myself to the Arsenal faithful, but they do a lot of time wasting, Arsenal, and it's often their defenders that are punished. You know, Raya, when they're up front at Old Trafford, they had three players booked for delaying restarts and sort of time wasting, and Calafiori was one of those that was booked at Old Trafford. And then finally, the biggest Arsenal strength of the lot, I'm going for a Declan Rice assist or goal. Liverpool did not defend set pieces particularly well against a very physical Newcastle team. Arsenal have got that as well in abundance. And if they're not on it, then they're going to struggle from those corners and free kicks. And Declan Rice, because Saka's out, I wondered whether Rice might take them from both sides. He sometimes only takes them from one. And he can pop up with a goal as well. So, yeah, Declan Rice to score or assist. Calafiori to be carded, and Salah shot on targets, around about a 16-1 shot.
Okay, big price bet builder from Mark for the big game at Anfield. We'll move on now to the assist treble, and we'll start off with Dan's selection first.
I'm going to go with Bradford in League One at home to FC Wimbledon, about 8-11. Two newly promoted teams going very well. Bradford unbeaten at the moment on 11 points. Wimbledon got 9 points, 3 wins and 2 defeats. But Bradford's home form, I mean, they got 55 points at home last season in League Two. That was the third highest total of any EFL club. They've already had two home wins in the league this season, including a very good 2-1 success at home to Luton, who are really carrying a strong squad for the level. So I just think that anyone going to Bradford this season in League One going to have a tough game. And Wimbledon are going there without Joe Lewis, a really important central defender who's been got injured a couple of matches ago. Johnny Jackson's doing a great job there, and he looks like he's going to consolidate the club in the third tier. But I think Bradford away is a tough one. Bradford to win.
Okay, that's Dan's selection. Mark, who are you looking at for the treble?
I'm going for Ipswich to beat Derby in the Championship. Not the start that Ipswich would have wanted to the season. I think they've played two really difficult games against Birmingham and Southampton, sides that you'd imagine would be sort of top six-ish with them come the end of the campaign. Against Preston, conceded an early penalty. It was the only shot on target that PNE had in the game. Ipswich will feel on the stats that they should have done enough to get at least something out of that game. And this is a drop down in grade from certainly from Birmingham and Southampton against Derby. So Ipswich and Bradford are the first two legs.
Yeah, and I'm going to stick in the Championship as Mark has done. And I'm going with Bristol City to beat Hull at 10-11. They had 72% possession. I think Dan mentioned that earlier, Bristol City against Derby last week. And the Rams were very fortunate to get a draw on that occasion. The Robins are still unbeaten. And I watched Hull against Blackburn last week. They were absolutely dire. Lost 3-0 at home to a Rovers team that had been struggling before then. I really just don't see how they bounce back at a really difficult trip to Ashton Gate. So I'm going with Bristol City to claim the victory. So Bradford, Ipswich and Bristol City are the assist treble this week. And we'll conclude this week's show with the naps from Dan and Mark. And Mark, we'll start with your nap first.
Manchester United to win an under 3.5 goals against Burnley. I think the Grimsby defeat obviously puts pressure on Amorim and United. I'm going to go back to the two Premier League games when I thought they were relatively solid, particularly against Arsenal, created enough to have got something out of that game. Burnley, they are a promoted club. There was only 3 shots on target in their game against Sunderland last week. So I think they'll be involved in a lot of low scoring games. They were on the wrong end of just not having enough quality against Tottenham. I think it will be the same against United. And 6 of United's last 7 games have actually gone under 2.5 goals. So I'm not expecting a classic, but I think United can ease some of the pressure and get a victory over Burnley, albeit not spectacularly.
And Dan, who's your nap this week?
Yeah, going to go with Bolton to win at Blackpool in League One. 3 draws in a row, Bolton, including the last away game. They got a 1-1 draw at Barnsley, where again they were the dominant team against a decent Barnsley side. Barnsley were reduced to 10 men in the second half, has to be said. But I think that the win's going to come for Bolton against the Blackpool team. Lost 4 or 5 games and a poor defence. Steve Bruce got a lot of problems to sort out.
Okay, well, a big thanks to both Mark and Dan for their input this week. Don't forget, of course, to like, subscribe and comment on the Racing Post YouTube channel. It's International Week next week, so we'll be back in a fortnight, which means that both Dan and Mark's tan will have gone down a little bit and maybe look less pale, hopefully, for the latest episode of The Assist. For now, though, enjoy the football this weekend and always please remember to gamble responsibly.